This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming, to movies, TV shows and pop culture, to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you from Chicago, USA. With your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here live from the MVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. You've been hearing a lot about the unvaccinated children movement and how vaccinations are dangerous. How did this movement start? CEO of Informed Consent Action Network, Del Bigtree, joins me to explain more of the anti-vax movement. Thanks for joining me, Del.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me, how did this non-vaccination movement, how did it start?
This movement, and it has many different names, has been called non-vax, anti-vax, partial vax, vaccine skeptics, but it really all starts from the very first time there was a vaccination with smallpox. I mean, the first time Edward Jenner scraped pus out of a cow that had cowpox and, you know, slathered it into a cut on someone's arm, there were people that said, I don't want to be a part of that process. And ever since then, we've had a fairly consistent vaccine skeptic movement. I think some people would say that recently it's sort of been invigorated. A lot of credit has been given to the documentary I made, Vax, which sort of gave people a new look at it, and we recognized there was a whistleblower inside of the CDC saying that they were committing scientific fraud on vaccine safety studies, you know, specifically the MMR autism study. So that really, I think, has at least made this movement more vocalized than it's been for some time.
Now, when it comes to anti-vaxxers, isn't it kind of like, shouldn't there be some vaccinations that kids should get and others where it's like kind of optional, or you should be getting all vaccinations?
I think that it should always be a choice. And I think that when you think of anti-vaxxers, there's people that simply didn't want to give their babies a hepatitis B vaccine on the first day of life, you know, which is a sexually transmitted disease like AIDS, which you're not going to come in contact with until you're sharing heroin needles or sleeping in promiscuous ways. There's people that just don't want that vaccine, and as soon as they decide not to, they're considered anti-vaxxers. So it's a very broad group of people, and I would say the most powerful part of the movement are X-vaxxers. There's people that absolutely believed in the vaccine program and then watched their children regress into serious lifelong illnesses, you know, neurological disorders and autoimmune disease, seizures right after the vaccines. And so they stopped vaccinating. And I think that that's what's really made the movement grow. And as far as, you know, should anyone do anything, I think that there's different ways of raising your children. And no, I don't believe that every person has to vaccinate if they don't want to. Even if you believe in herd immunity, you know, 3 to 5% of people could decide completely to, you know, miss every vaccine, and that's their right. And it doesn't affect, you know, this concept of herd immunity, which I could argue against that too. But, you know, I think everyone should have a choice.
For me, my first exposure to anti-vaxxers, it was actually Jenny McCarthy. And she was backing her beliefs up with this doctor who turned out that he falsified his research. And he got into big trouble for that, too. But you hear so much about these doctors that said one thing, and it turns out the research was wrong and vaccinations were a good thing. I mean, what do you do then?
To begin with, the doctor you're referring to actually never was accused officially of falsifying documents. There was a journalist that claimed he falsified documents, but there's no actual record that he falsified documents. So that's not a correct statement. What he lost his license for was the fact that they didn't get ethical approval for some of the studies that they were doing with children. And there was two doctors that lost their licenses. One was Dr. Andy Wakefield, which is who you're referring to. And the other was Professor John Walker Smith. Professor John Walker Smith appealed that decision to a real courtroom and got his license back just a couple of years ago. And the judge said that after looking at it, that they didn't need ethical approval for the studies because they were actually treating the children that they were working on. Therefore, there was no need for that. So this story has been misrepresented by journalists that aren't doing their homework. So that's to begin with. Secondly, I look forward to hearing what doctors have actually been disproved. These are opinions by journalists. They're not actually factual statements. There is no fraud, and there was no manipulation of data that's ever been proven in the courtroom. So there's the answer to that question.
don't have kids personally, but my sister, I've talked about it with her. She wanted to not vaccinate her kids. She would rather let them get chickenpox or measles naturally and then let their immune system like build a defense to it. Would that be a better way to do it than vaccination?
I'm not going to tell people what's a better way for their own kids. I'll tell you that's what I'm going to do with my children. We know that if you get wild measles or wild chickenpox, you know, naturally, you have lifelong immunity. You have superior immunity. Whereas if you get vaccinated for it, you have to get vaccinations over and over and over and over again because it's inferior immunity. There's no vaccine that has achieved the level of immunity that having the infection gives you. So for measles right now, there's two vaccines as children. They're talking at the CDC about adding a third one in universities because so many people are getting mumps and other illnesses that they were vaccinated for, and including like you've seen sailors on a ship that can't come to port because all of the vaccinated sailors are getting the mumps. So the vaccines are failing. And then if you look at the CDC's adult schedule, you'll see that there's two more MMRs for adults. So that's somewhere in the range of 4 to 5 MMR vaccines to achieve what a 4-day rash will give you for life. And I think that ends up also being an issue where people, you're like your sister, if her children get the measles, they will be the only true pillars of herd immunity in their community because they can never get the disease, unlike every one of their friends, that if they lapse or aren't aware that the vaccine is worn off, they are now infectious, like most of the adults in this country currently are. The most adults haven't gotten their MMR vaccine. If you talk to most adults over the age of 35 or 40, they haven't had an MMR vaccine in like 10 years. So the truth is the greater body of adults in this country are all anti-vaxxers. They just don't know it.
Wait, so you have to get the vaccine over and over again?
Yes.
I didn't know
You didn't know that?
No. I knew a tetanus shot. I didn't know that with everything else.
Yeah, so look up. All you have to do is look up adult recommended vaccines by the CDC, and you'll see two more MMR vaccines for adults, showing that the CDC knows that the vaccine doesn't last. And so that's one of the problems with vaccination. It's one of the problems with the concept of herd immunity. You can't have herd immunity if you don't have lifelong immunity in everyone that comes in contact with the illness.
Well, what about something like tetanus? I mean, that's not something that you could easily build up against unless you want to stick your hand into, like, some rusty nails. I mean, wouldn't that be a good vaccination to get?
There's a lot of people in the anti-vaccine movement that get the tetanus vaccine, especially ranchers and people that work with cows and horses and things like that. So it's a personal opinion. But the truth is that in this discussion of what vaccines people should get, tetanus is not a communicable disease, so it really doesn't matter. It's up to your own personal choice if you want to take on the risks of a vaccine for your concern with tetanus. But tetanus is an extremely rare disease to get, very, very rare. So, you know, you have to start looking at the data and asking yourself, is it worth the risk and the amount of injuries that are being reported for the DTaP vaccine or the Tdap vaccine, which is how you get your tetanus? Most people don't just get a tetanus vaccine. They get a diphtheria, tetanus, and an acellular pertussis vaccine. And now we know that the pertussis vaccine doesn't actually stop transmission. All it stops is your symptoms. So it actually turns you into what they call an asymptomatic carrier. You can look this up. All the science is now showing this. You're actually dangerous because you're walking around potentially with pertussis, but you don't know it. So you're putting babies and children at risk, whereas if you had a cough, you'd probably stay home. And even worse now, once you get that pertussis vaccine, they're now reporting that because of something called epitope suppression, linked epitope suppression, that you're going to get more pertussis throughout your life because you got the vaccine than those that don't get it. It's an error they're trying to figure out how to fix, but it's one they will not be able to fix for anyone who's gotten a DTaP vaccine. They will get more pertussis throughout their life than someone that did not get the vaccine. So these are the types of risks you decide to take on when you take a vaccine, and you have to then look at the risk of actually getting tetanus and how few people in the modern world ever actually die from that tiny amount of people.
Now, a lot of people, the reason, you know, vaccination comes up is because we've seen more and more measles outbreaks among children. Should the government step in and kind of force people to take vaccinations? I mean, is it coming to that point?
Well, it's obviously coming to that point. There's multiple states in America that are deciding to make that decision, like California just is now trying to take away the medical exemption. They don't even want doctors to be able to make decisions for patients. They want bureaucrats to decide to inject, even when your doctor doesn't think it's safe. So that's the level the pharmaceutical lobby has taken this. They're now the most powerful lobby in Washington. They're outspending oil and gas 2-1, and they're buying politicians to try and force inject you. And I think in order to really answer that question, people should just take the word vaccinations out of it and say, do you want to live in a country where the government forcibly injects you with products you have no control over and don't know what's in them? Because that's where we're going with this. In Argentina, they just took away, you can't get your driver's license renewed unless you are fully vaccinated as an adult. And remember, I told you there's an adult schedule. So there's 16 vaccines and counting that you'll be lined up for on a yearly basis. Do you want the government to have that kind of power? And then when you ask yourself that question, you have to ask yourself, will you always trust your government that much? I mean, I know Latinos, gays, bis, lesbians, transgender, African Americans that think that Donald Trump is not got their best interests in mind. Now, I'm not going to make an opinion on Donald Trump, but what I'm telling you is there are actually American citizens that don't think the president is taking care of them. Now, you're going to put in a syringe in the president's hand to inject people, and they don't think he likes them. So right there, you can see the potential future danger. And if people think I'm exaggerating, you have to understand that the president, not people, but the president elects the head of the CDC, the head of the FDA, the head of the EPA, the head of the National Institute of Health, all of the people that are going to decide those future injections for you. So can you imagine? Is it possible that sometime in our future we could get a bad actor, that we could make a bad choice and have a president that didn't maybe have all of our interests in mind, and then you want to be injected with things you have no control over? Because remember, we now have vaccines that can sterilize you. Not saying that we're using them, but we could. Is that the type of power we think it's smart to give our government? I don't think so.
Well, what about the long-term repercussions of not vaccinating? I mean, we're all good right now, but all it takes is one. And if one child gets sick or one older person gets sick and just passes it on to everybody, whether it be a school or a nursing home, I mean, isn't that worthy enough to get a vaccination? Or is it a matter of we need to do more research in what the vaccinations are? I mean, because vaccinations, I thought, were good.
My nonprofit has studied the safety of vaccines for 3 years and done nothing else. I'm a medical journalist. I worked on the daytime talks for the doctors and won an Emmy Award celebrating science and medicine. And what I can tell you is that when you actually start looking at safety in the studies, you'll find out that there's never been a proper safety study of any of the 16 vaccines we give our children in 72 doses now in America. Not one of them was ever tested against the placebo group, which is how you go through safety trials for drugs. We were all under the impression that vaccines had gone through the same safety studies, and they haven't. So there's no way to actually say that they're safe. And this idea that one person getting sick gets everybody sick, how is that possible if everyone's vaccinated? Either you don't believe the vaccines work, or you shouldn't be worrying about one or two people that decide to not vaccinate. And lastly, we should really be looking at the health of our children in the vaccine age. You know, we now vaccinate, as I said, 72 times by the time you're 18. That's increased since the 1980s when I and people my age got 11 vaccines by the time they were 18. Were we dangerous then? Were we, you know, were we dying of polio and measles in the 80s? We weren't. So something's changed, and it's not our health. It's actually the advertising of the vaccine program and the amount of vaccines we're given. And I think if we're really going to talk about health, no, I don't believe one person getting sick is a problem for society. What I'd like to talk about is the greatest decrease in public health we've seen in recorded history. We have the sickest generation of children in America that we've seen in decades. We have the sickest nation of children in the industrialized world. Let me give you some examples. We have more babies die on the first day of life in America than every other industrialized nation combined. We have more babies die in the first year of life than the 20 other richest nations in the world. We now report medically that you're 70% more likely to die before reaching the age of 18 in America than the 20 other richest nations in the world. And most specifically, what's really shocking is when we got 11 vaccines in the 1980s, our chronic illness rate of our children was about 12.8%, meaning they had either a neurological or an autoimmune disease, 12.8%. Now that we're giving 72 vaccines, our chronic illness rate in our children has risen to 54% of America's children now have a chronic lifelong condition. They don't have a rash from measles for 4 days. They have plaque psoriasis the rest of their life. They have diabetes the rest of their life. They have autism the rest of their life, neurological disorders. We have never seen a decrease in health like that in recorded history, where when you think about autoimmune disease, which is really the crisis of our time, you're talking about suddenly the immune systems of our children are attacking their own bodies. Is it possible that, and people will say, well, maybe it's the air, maybe it's the food, maybe it's the water. We should be investigating all those things. I agree. But shouldn't we be looking closest at the one product that's designed to alter our immune system for life? Because if our immune systems are suddenly confused and attacking the cells of our own body, something confused them. Or we're the first species in history to be devolving on this planet, becoming less able to live on this planet. So for all of the arguments that vaccines have made us healthier, the science actually says the exact opposite.
Now, is there proven studies for that? Are there long-term studies for that?
No, so the CDC. Well, what we know is everything I said. What we know is that we have the highest rates of autoimmune disease and chronic illness we've ever seen. And if you look to studies in France by Roman Girardi, Dr. Roman Girardi, Jibin Yao in China, or Christopher Exley, what you'll see are studies looking at the amount of aluminum in many cases being injected into our babies through these vaccines, and those are a known neurotoxin. So when they inject mice and rats in these studies, they show rats developing multiple sclerosis. They show rats developing autism-like behaviors when they're given the same amount of aluminum we're injecting into our children in our childhood schedule. So, yes, there's studies showing a direct link between increased autoimmune disease and neurological disorders in animal studies. Now, we need to do more demographic studies because we can't test on human beings. But if the animal models are showing us that, and our demographic studies, every study that's actually compared vaccinated children to unvaccinated children show that the vaccinated children have much, much higher rates of autoimmune disease and neurological disorders. And so we need to be doing more studies like that and asking the real question, which is, are vaccines actually making us healthier?
Well, Del, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
Well, I have my nonprofit is the Informed Consent Action Network. So you can go to icandecide.org. And there, there's several tabs. We have white papers written about our investigation into vaccines. But what's really fascinating is we've been in a debate with Health and Human Services, that's the head of our vaccine department, and you can read the letters that have been shared back and forth, and I think you'll see that we've won the discussion on vaccine safety. In fact, now nobody wants to have that debate anymore. They just want to force us to vaccinate because they can't prove it's safe, and that's why you have laws being passed. And if you want to watch my weekly talk show online, you can go to The High Wire with Del Bigtree on Facebook or YouTube or iTunes, or just go to thehighwire.com. And every Thursday at 11 a.m., I interview people. Like last week, I interviewed a Merck scientist who, while he was working at Merck, had children, looked into the safety of the vaccines made by his company, and decided not to vaccinate his children, saying everything I just told you. There's been no safety studies. He believes in Merck and the work they do on drugs. But what he says is, we are not doing that same science on vaccines, and it's very dangerous.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Head to WGNradio.com for exclusive content by Mason. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter @MasonVeraPayne, that's all one word, and don't forget to share the show with your friends.